A podcast of the cinema.
What's your name?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
What's my name?
Dave White.
What do we do?
We're film critics.
Why?
Boy, there's a question.
When? Where? For whomst?
At the moment, for ourselves.
What else?
We're married.
That's a thing.
What day is it? I feel like Shug Avery. We're married now.
What day is it? Where are we?
It's a Tuesday. We're late on this episode.
We normally do this show on Sunday afternoon.
Uh huh.
But then Sunday afternoon happened, and like your family Zoom took forever, and then like,
you had not seen a thing yet.
I had not seen enough of the things yet, and I was trying to, but then I didn't get to, and then yesterday was weird because the day just got away with us. Remember when the virus started and you would look on Instagram and people would be like, oh, we're putting together puzzles. Who had the time?
We never had the gardening phase. Like, we were already working at home, so we had no excuse to suddenly be like, oh, I'm alphabetizing the spices now.
When did you put together a puzzle? Like, I don't feel like there's been one moment where we've...
You know, people are talking about like,
working.
Oh, I'm digging into the Criterion Channel and watching all these classics. I'm like, that's great. I'm doing that for work.
Now, in March, when I was super sick, yes. I was watching lots more. Like, you go back on my list. Hey, Alonzo, I keep a list.
Of course you do.
I go back on my list, and I'm like, oh, look at all these old movies that I was watching. Bang, 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 bang. Because I was sick as a... heck dog on the couch.
Because this is what we do when we have spare time. Watch more films.
Oh, well, but here's the thing. TCM is a soothing balm.
Sure.
In many ways. Sometimes it's not, but quite often it can be. And when you're sick and all you want to see is like
Alice Faye.
Bette Davis being mean to somebody.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go?
Exactly.
You're going to go to TCM.
One this stop is and a, one stop
not
only.
Not an ad for TCM.
No.
We just, you know, like it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I had, I finally got my post office situation squared away. Today, this morning.
It sounds like Soylent Green in there.
It was yesterday.
Ugh.
I go yesterday and I'm trying to mail some packages. And you walk in and there's the post office box area.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another door that separates that from the clerks.
Yes.
The line was to that inner door.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if everyone had been distant from each other...
That would be like four or five people.
That would have been like five people, but they weren't. And I had this moment where I thought, okay, bye. And I walked out.
No, I don't blame
you.
And
I went to the sidewalk and I thought, I'm going to stand here and just let the line... dissipate. There will be a lull. There's always a lull. I'll go in during the lull. But you know what the lull was? It was LULZ on me. joke was on me.
I stood
out there 15 minutes. People kept pouring into the place. Miniature moral of the story. Don't go to the post office the day after a holiday.
I was going to say, it was the Monday after a holiday
People
weekend.
Were pouring into the place. body to body. Ugh. And the line went all the way into the post office box area, and I thought,
oh no, no.
I must be going now. I have to leave all of you. I have to get in the car and drive away really fast. I get in the car. I've still got my stuff. Nothing got mailed. I get in the car, and I drive around the corner, and there's that Starbucks on the corner. Packed into the gills, that place too. Who's running the show in public right now? It's, and when I got home and I, you know, was thinking about it more, I thought, how many people in that post office line walked in, saw the line, and simultaneously felt like a moment of panic combined with, I'm here, I've driven here, I've got this thing, I've got to mail it.
I've got four other errands I've got to run.
Four other things I have to do. I'm super uncomfortable with the way this is happening. Like, all it takes is a few people not playing by the rules, and everybody else, in spite of their discomfort, might just participate.
It's easier sometimes to just, like, stew than have to be the one saying, you, step back. I know that you, however, Dave White, will always be the person to say, you, step back.
It was disconcerting, and I left, and nothing got mailed. I thought, I'm going to go back this morning, 2 days after a holiday.
There you go.
And I'm going to...
I was surprised you didn't time it to where you were there, like, before the door opened, frankly.
Yes, but see... You get there right at 9 a.m. and there's always a cluster of people who are in that door. And they don't line up. They just stand in a group trying to jockey for some kind of position.
Gotcha.
People are bad. People are very bad.
Everyone's terrible, and they're making this whole thing worse.
I walk
and they're
in
making
this
it
morning,
last longer.
And the line is still to the inner door, but they were all wearing masks and they were all separated. Okay. They were all distant from each other.
Right.
So I thought, all right, I'm going to do it. Woman walks right up behind me. And I spun around my heels. I go, get back! And she gives me this face, like, eh, bad man, going to hit me. And I was like, I moved my hand. I'm waving my hands. Get back!
Shoo, shoo.
She got all the way back.
Mask or no mask?
Oh, everyone had on masks.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's me. Like, I've got the mask. I've got my protective eyewear now.
Yes.
I've got my gloves. I'm wearing gloves. No one's wearing gloves. I'm wearing gloves. Y'all better stay out of my way.
I think we should get you a beekeeper suit.
No, I want that thing. I want that thing that that looks like the people in the movie Arrival. I want that thing that you can buy. What's that called again?
The visor, like a VYZR. The
big costume shield thing.
Yeah,
is what
like
it is.
Like the big, the old scuba
it's
helmet.
It's not even
that goes
in production. It's not even in production yet. It's a GoFundMe. No, it's not a GoFundMe. It's a
Kickstarter
campaign.
Or yeah.
Oh, you. Let me tell you something. I'll walk right into the post office wearing one of those. But I won't, I won't be wearing one because they're very expensive. And they haven't begun being... They're not even made yet.
I think the first batch is coming out soon.
Well, that first batch is going to be beta tested.
Well, exactly.
On me. No, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got my own... Got my own mechanisms here in place. And it involves yelling at people in public. Some people don't like it. Too bad some people. I'm not out here trying to get in that Rona.
Nope.
It's not happening. I'm not doing it.
Not here to make friends, not here to come down with a virus.
Unless I already had it in March, which is totally possible.
Maybe.
What's happening? We've got movies to talk about.
We do. So many.
I don't know why I'm... Why am I not getting to the point of cinema?
Why start now?
Can we get Welcome to Chechnya out of the way? And not because it's a bad film, and not because I don't think it's valuable, and not because I don't think it's worthy. It is all of those things. But Oh my God, it's harrowing.
It is a stone cold bummer.
Deeply upsetting, and if you're queer,
which the subject matter merits, granted.
If you're queer because that's what we are, it's even more upsetting. Like, if you're straight, you look at that and you go, oh, wow, that's so terrible. I feel so bad for them. But if you're queer, you're like, when is that happening here next? Like, you know?
Because
we have a government where it could completely, totally happen.
They're very palsy with the government in this movie that is making this stuff happen. So David France, the journalist turned documentary filmmaker, he did the Academy Award nominated How to Survive a Plague. He did The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson. This is about queer people in Chechnya who have to get the hell out of Chechnya because things are so terrible there, where like thugs can, you know, put up a fake ad online, and when you go meet them, they like torture you on video. Families disown their queer children, or worse.
Yeah.
You know, and because Russia is so chummy with Chechnya and so not much better.
Or did they just take it over?
I think technically Chechnya.
It might be. I don't think chummy's exactly.
I think Chechnya is still technically autonomous, but they're very hand in glove with the Putin.
Well, yeah, because they got.
Anyway,
re-dominated.
It's not enough to get out of Chechnya.
If I'm not mistaken.
You have to get out of Russia entirely.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this documentary focuses on a handful of people doing that and the very brave activists who are kind of creating this underground railroad to get them out of Chechnya and to get them out of Russia. It is intense. It is a tough movie to watch, but I think a really valuable one and just a really great piece of documentary journalism. A thing that France does that is really interesting is that because being queer in Chechnya is so dangerous, all of the people in the film who are either the people trying to get out or the activists who are helping them have their features digitally altered.
Yes. That's the astonishing.
And they don't tell you this
until
like toward the end of the film. Somebody finally makes it to Germany. He does a press conference, and once he sort of exposes his face to the world, the movie then shows you what he really looks like.
Right.
And all these other people
stunning.
In the film,
yeah.
They use CG technology, the same kind of stuff that they use to, like, you know, de-age Michael Douglas or whatever, to like give them, to make them look different, to protect their anonymity.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating, and I think it opens up a whole new chapter of how docs are going to work. I mean, obviously there is a danger of like the deep fake and the way that people were able to manipulate video and sound and all that stuff these days.
Right.
But this is a use that is on the side of the angels. Like, it's absolutely doing the right thing, because otherwise you just have a movie full of blurry faces.
Blurry faces are people speaking, you know, behind
mob informants
in silhouette or whatever, with voice distortion. And you know, if you recall back in the 60s, the CBS special
that The Homosexuals?
Mike Wallace, that was known as, it was the CBS special, the new special called The Homosexuals.
Yes.
Everyone on that special spoke in silhouette with a voice altering thing, except for Gore Vidal, who was like,
could
you
not
know
be
what?
Bothered.
Yeah, screw you, I'm gay, and I'm as, you know, moral as you, Mike Wallace.
Yeah.
And
it's on YouTube. If you've never seen The Homosexuals, check it out. It's
you want some history?
Yeah.
Get it. Go get it. It's right there.
A history not just of the existence of queer people in the United States, but how the media handled them.
Right.
Not
so
great.
So this film is absolutely worth your time if you've got the strength.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're all in a mood right now. We're undergoing a collective trauma. I don't think it's too fine a point to say that.
I don't think that's too heavy-handed a thing
to
say at all.
You know, decide for yourself if and when you are in the mood for this really powerful piece of like I said, advocacy journalism. It premiered on HBO. Well, it premiered at Sundance. It just premiered on HBO.
We saw it at the HBO offices in January.
Yeah.
And I still get chills thinking about it and talking about it.
Yeah. Absolutely. So if you get HBO Max or Go or whatever, it's going to be there. So yeah, David France, I just am constantly impressed with his stuff. I mean, I think How to Survive a Plague is one of the best films of the 2000s, and you know, narrative, documentary or otherwise. And this is just really powerful stuff. And I hope it's the kind of movie that, you know, can make a difference. The, you know, we're dealing with our own government right now that doesn't care about this stuff. But I hope that in the eyes of the world, that other more civilized nations see this film and, you know, like, take steps to protect these people, or at least provide asylum for these folks that are trying to get the hell out.
Right.
Okay, so that's Welcome to Chechnya.
You know what, though? Before we talk about the thing that everyone wants to talk about, we have to talk about Ovid.
Ovid.tv.
Ovid.tv.
We sure do.
It's an ad, you guys, and here it comes.
Yes. Ovid is different. Started with help from 8 independent film studios, Ovid now streams more than 800 titles.
Oh, hey, you know what?
What?
Remember last week when you were reading the copy and you were like, Ovid is different. And we talked about that pain reliever, Nuprin.
Yes.
Well, guess what?
What?
Nuprin still exists.
Shut up.
That's correct. I will shut up.
I've never seen it. I haven't seen it in Nuprin in a store in decades.
Well, listener and friend Greg, who works in the world of
pharmaceuticals,
Krogering, I think. Forget what he said. Anyway, they have it.
Fascinating. Also, not relevant to what we're discussing.
Not at all. This has been an ad digression.
Yes.
Sponsored by Ovid.
Ovid. That's right. That's what you get from us. Ovid now streams more than 800 titles, most of which can't be found anywhere else. And they add 20 to 35 new films a month. And they drop a lot fewer a month than most services out there. So the collection is always growing. So yes, you got Netflix, you got your Hulu and your Disney Plus and your the aforementioned HBO Max. Awesome. It might feel like you've got a lot of stuff, but this is different. This is an alternative. This is the stuff that you are not going to find on Netflix or Hulu or any of those places. It is the home of the best independent films, global cinema, social issue, and documentary films. Films, dare we say, from an independent world.
Like Ida.
And yes.
Ida's there this month.
They have added
just dropped Ida.
A bunch of stuff from Music Box Films, which is a really cool distributor. What else? What you've got the list in front of you. What else is happening?
I just said Ida from
Pawlikowski.
Pawlikowski, pardon me.
Pawlikowski.
Pardon my last name, butchering of the Polish name. And that's such a great, stark, cold, wintry film to enjoy in the middle of the summer.
Oh, why not?
You should. It's the one about the nun in Poland.
Yes.
After the war, who learns things about how she wound up in the convent and stuff.
Yeah, Music Box, they have delivered some great stuff unto Ovid. A movie I know you were a huge fan of, A Quiet Passion with Cynthia Nixon.
It's both quiet and passionate.
Yes.
It's about Emily Dickinson.
From Terrence Davis.
It is, however, a film that should be watched in companion,
yes,
hand in hand, double feature it with Wild Nights with Emily. Because
get the full picture of Emily Dickinson.
Cynthia Nixon is so good in this movie, and it's so much a Terrence Davis film where everything is just like, shh, we're having a quiet passion right now. Let's stare at the wall for a second.
Yeah.
But then you've got Wild Nights with Emily where you're just like, oh no, she was out getting laid with ladies.
Yes.
Yeah.
With her brother's wife. Raul Ruiz's Mysteries of Lisbon, a short film that we screened at Outfest a few years ago that is really amazing, and it was an Oscar nominee, called Facing Fear, about a reformed neo-Nazi skinhead who tracks down the gay guy that he bashed. And
what does the gay guy think about this?
And spoiler, they become friends.
I would have a hard time with that.
Well, you know.
Does the film make a case for them, for the need for them to become friends?
You get it when you see it, yes.
I guess I need to watch it, because my first thought would be, no.
No, I know.
No, we can't. We cannot be friends.
Well, because you lack all compassion.
You can go, oh, I lack compassion? neo-Nazi comes up on me and tries to kill me. I lack compassion.
No, I'm teasing. Yeah. That's totally valid, but you know, he's better than both of us.
You ain't got to forgive a neo-Nazi. By the way, you don't have to.
The Melvin Van Peebles documentary.
But I will watch this movie because now you've stoked my curiosity.
Right? Are you piqued?
Yeah.
The Melvin Van Peebles documentary, How to Eat Your Watermelon in White Company and Enjoy It. The doc, The Workers' Cup, about the migrant workers who had to build the World Cup stadium.
Right.
I mean, this is just...
There's a lot.
Yeah.
The point is that you should subscribe to Ovid if you've already got all the other, you know, apps. Dump one of them and get Ovid instead.
You'll be glad you did.
Honestly, look, after you watch Hamilton, do you need Disney Plus? No.
They don't even have the Boatniks, y'all. Come on.
Or Super Dad. Or Monkeys Go Home, I hear. So what's the point, really, of that?
Anyway, look, decide for yourself. Ovid offers a free 14-day trial, and after that, it's $6.99 a month or $69.99 a year. So head over to www.ovid.tv. They've just launched a new platform and design. Take a look, get started, dig in, splash around, see what you think.
You watch Superdad and all you can think about is Bob Crane being a swinger.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I can watch Superdad now that I've seen autofocus. That's just too much.
Yeah, but I don't think about him being murdered. I think about him being a swinger.
I go right to the murder part. Sorry. Anyway, Ovid.tv. Speaking of Hamilton.
Hamilton's happening, you guys.
Yes.
If you have Disney Plus.
It's the chronic whatcles of Hamilton. No? Okay.
No. No. You... Tell people what is Hamilton.
Okay, Hamilton, the hugely successful multi-Tony winning Broadway musical from Lin-Manuel Miranda, was at its sort of at the peak of the original cast back in the summer of 2016. They filmed two performances of the show with cinematographer Declan Quinn. They were going to release it theatrically in 2021. The show has been such a huge, huge ongoing hit.
Yeah.
And even in the touring companies, like, it's next to impossible to get tickets.
Right.
So they were like, what the heck? We're gonna release this thing in a movie. We'll still sell tickets to this show.
Oh, yeah, they will.
And then...
When shows can happen.
Exactly.
Someday.
And so then, you know, we got to Especially Now, and Disney was like, hey, here's a thought. What if we put this out now on Disney Plus? And they did. And it's all anyone's talking about.
Yeah. So it's the story of Alexander Hamilton.
Yep.
And his rise to success.
Yes.
He was a ladder climbing careerist.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He was a, you know, bastard child immigrant. You know, in the early
those
early
are the
days.
Lyrics of the song.
Yes,
that he describes himself. I got to say this about the beginning.
Uh huh.
When they early in the show, characters are sort of introducing themselves.
Yes,
and because the primary,
idiom
mode of communication in this show is rapped lyrics.
Right.
The early bit is such a delightful throwback to the 80s of the, like, my name is blah, and I'm here to say, like, it's...
I'm Mike D, and I get respect. Your cash and your jewelry is what I expect.
Right, yeah. And so, I was hesitant.
I'm Thomas Paine, and I've got common sense. Thomas Paine's not actually a character in this. I just pulled that name out of nowhere.
I was a little, you know, worried.
Okay.
Going in, because
this was popular and successful, and you immediately distrust that.
Well, there is that. There's my base level of distrust for anything popular
and
successful.
It is a Broadway musical.
And it is a Broadway musical, you see, and that is another problem. I don't have a problem with musical theater. really, because even though I'm always reluctant to go to one or to watch one, they are different animals than musical films.
Sure.
And that's one of my reasons.
A dog is not a cat.
Right. The problem I have with new Broadway is that if they are going to deviate from the Broadway songwriting style that seems to be overlaid on almost everything, you wind up with something like Rent or American Idiot in the rock and roll vernacular. Well, here comes one that's hip hop and R&B based. And I was worried.
Sure.
Because other than Hedwig, I don't think I've seen what I would consider genuine rock and roll take place on a stage in musical theater form.
Yeah.
The musical theater form demands, you know, songs that tell the story, and it demands a certain, you know, structure to keep the audience engaged. So it's like song, song, song.
And if you're seeing a rock musical, you know that rock is in very heavy quotation
marks. That's where I was going with this. So the Broadway form attracts people who like the Broadway form, you know?
I'm doing a Broadway musical based on REM's first three albums.
Solo, yeah, exactly. Soloist, big crowd of people behind them singing. Sure. Everyone, you know, face first into the audience.
Yes.
Or, you know, one person's stirring solo number without the big chorus behind them. It's very recognizable.
Yeah.
How do you incorporate hip hop into that and still make it Broadway? And will you be successful? So I was very reluctant.
Now, he's done this before.
He has done this before.
In a show that neither of us have seen.
But I've not seen In the Heights.
Yeah.
Okay. After the first two or three numbers was, I'm not going to waste my shot.
I'm not giving away my shot.
Not giving away my shot. When that one was done, when that song was done, I thought, oh, okay, I will continue watching this. I see what you are doing, and you are sort of having your cake and eating it too here. Like, it's, you know, legitimately hip-hop based, folded into Broadway. And I think it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really impressed. Because, you know, you and I had...
We're going to get to the politics in a minute. Hang on.
Yeah. Oh, everybody hold up. No, you and I had wanted to see this show because everybody had been raving about it. But,
right.
Like, you know, tickets have been impossible to get to. And in the meantime, we didn't really want to, like, listen to the cast album or, you know, like, investigate it in other ways. Like, the idea would be that when we finally saw it, we would see it for the first time and be exposed to it for the first time.
Yes.
So I went in pretty cold, you know, apart from just sort of knowing, you know, who the characters are in the actual history of the country, you know.
Since you're a big 1776 fan.
Also that, yes, yeah. My other musical theater about the Founding Fathers, which Lin-Manuel Miranda is also a fan of and totally acknowledges as a,
yeah,
as an antecedent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was, and you know, admittedly, when anything gets this popular and this beloved,
yeah,
and this, like, none dare question it,
yeah,
I get a little suspect myself.
Like, what?
A little
suspicious. What's, yeah, your first thought is like, what's wrong?
Yeah. Is it really? 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 And really? So, yeah, so in a nutshell, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote the thing and wrote the music, stars as Alexander Hamilton. Everybody in the show is playing one of the sort of essential figures of the dawn of the United States of America. And all of the Americans are played by performers of color, black, Latino, Asian. The only white people on stage are King George, played by Jonathan Groff,
yeah,
or like royalists,
yeah,
in the, you know, in the colonies,
yeah.
And you know, the vernacular of the show is very much, you know, using hip hop, and that was kind of another reason why I was glad to watch it on Disney Plus, was the closed captions, because they talk really fast sometimes.
There are sequences where it's really fast paced
with like rhyme schemes that Sondheim would appreciate.
Uh-huh. Well, that's why hip hop is so great, Alonzo.
I know.
Because after PM Dawn, things were different. I don't know if you knew about that or not.
Yes, because PM Dawn is my sole hook into the entire world of hip hop. Beyond that, I don't know anything.
So, okay. This is a highly effective example of what really rousing musical theater can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, and it's smart, and it's emotionally fulfilling.
Yes.
Provocative. Philippa Sue steals the show, really, for me, as Eliza. I know a lot of people would say David Diggs steals the show as Thomas Jefferson, and he does, but Eliza Hamilton is the heart of the show for me.
I was going to say Renee Elise Goldsberry as her sister Angelica.
Also, she's also great.
But neither is a wrong answer.
Yeah. The cast is really wonderful.
Yeah.
Leslie Odom Jr. Yeah. And the point of it, the casting of non-white actors.
Yes.
Is something that is never spoken about in the show itself.
Right.
It is merely there to relentlessly remind you.
Yes.
That the United States, in its infancy, was a country built on the subjugation of black slaves, the genocide of indigenous people who were here first. And then, you know, on and on throughout history. So the cast is a constant reminder of who got left out.
Right.
Who got squashed to make the thing that we see when we watch 1776.
Right.
You know, you see 1776, and the thing that's supposed to excite you at the end is everyone signing the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, all you have to do is go read The People's History of the United States by Fox News favorite Howard Zinn. They love him over there now, these days.
They just discovered him, apparently.
Figured out who he was, and they are hopping mad.
Years after his death, a copy turned up in the office.
Anyway, and so I know that there are critics of this show who take issue with the way that a protagonist is presented, mm-hmm, in musical theater.
Yeah.
You are meant to celebrate the protagonist.
Right.
Even if he's not a great guy. Alexander Hamilton was not a great guy. He did some good things. Also, he did not do some good things.
Yes.
And so, you know, the book is the play is based on a biography of Hamilton that Lin-Manuel Miranda was really into. There are critics of that biography who say that it's not fully accurate, and so there are criticisms of this show that are valid and are also sort of I don't want to say swept away by the content that's on stage, mm-hmm. but they are issues that the show has chosen not to deal with.
Right.
And depending on your perspective, that's for better or for worse.
Right. I mean, I think it does draw into a whole sort of aspect of history that a lot of people are trying to address now.
Uh-huh.
And it's this idea of like, can we say anything about this moment in time, these people in this moment in time, and not like, you know, go into a lot of the less savory aspects of those people. At the same time, I would argue that even if the subject of slavery isn't, you know, addressed in a heavy way, like it weaves throughout, abolition is mentioned, there's different things, the sight of David Diggs as Thomas Jefferson,
yes,
in and of itself, I think, is commentary.
It is.
You know, I feel like it's almost like the show shouldn't have to say a lot more than that, because that's such a striking thing. All of these characters who were slave owners being played by people of color. That, to me, feels like a powerful statement.
It is, and yet it is an intangible one. And therefore, because it is not even a little more explicit.
Okay.
And it could have been a little more explicit.
Yeah, I mean, 1776 at least has, you know, molasses to rum.
For example.
Yes.
Alexander Hamilton was a lawyer before he became part of the
cabinet.
The cabinet. And in his time as a lawyer, he bought and sold slaves on behalf of clients.
Mm.
He then married into a slave-owning family.
Mm-hmm.
He then participated in the buying and selling of slaves on behalf of his in-laws.
Hmm.
We don't hear anything about that. All we hear about is that he was an abolitionist.
Right.
Why? Ask Lin-Manuel Miranda why. I don't have the answer. You know, there's a scene in which Thomas Jefferson talks about Sally Hemings. She's in and she's out. Gone.
Yeah.
That's it. We don't talk about the structural racism that built the country.
Right.
Even a little. It's not even in there a little bit, really. They mention slavery. But it feels sometimes that as if to do so is to, like, topple this house that's being built. And the play has other concerns. And so it is this complicated thing. It is at once a sort of bracing, you know, reworking of, you know, that moment in history.
Mm-hmm.
Presented, again, by actors who are the descendants of people who were crushed by the United States of America.
Right.
And that as a visual, you know, as a visual, you know, point is valuable and important.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks Lin-Manuel Miranda has a little bit of hero worship going on with Alexander Hamilton.
You think?
Because his complications are smoothed down. Okay. Not fully. He does, you know, he does do terrible things in the show. I'm not saying that he doesn't. I'm not saying that this show contains, you know, a glowing report on his behavior in life.
And terrible things to people he loves, not just like in the public sphere.
Exactly. But the difference between personal, you know, moral failings and public moral failings is, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
If you're setting up a country and you are going to participate in, you know, a world that is brutalizing entire segments of the population. The Quakers denounced slavery in the 1750s. Now, were they the mainstream? No. But they existed.
Right.
So the idea of an unpopular minority voice that was against slavery existed. Yes, everyone involved was a product of their time.
Yeah.
But their time also included people who were not having it. I am certainly not saying that I want the play to stop every 5 minutes and say, by the way, audience, reminding you, we all know slavery was terrible. Like, I can figure things out.
Yeah.
Right? At the same time, got a lot of people on stage saying a lot of things really quickly. Could have squoze in a couple more stanzas about the people that you are talking about. And the, as you mentioned before, the unsavory aspects of not only their lives, mm-hmm. but of their participation in the culture. There's no real mention of Native Americans in the show.
No, that is completely...
And I am confused about that. So, is this a great show? Yes, this is a great show.
Yes.
Do we all need to know more things about history than what we learned in middle school American history class? Because what do you get after that? What? One more American history class in high school?
That's the other thing.
It's and like, who teaches it? And how is it taught? And what is your textbook from Texas teaching you?
Thank you.
And like, so what this show really does do is it makes people have to go Google historical figures and be like, oh, they did that? Oh, they did that?
Yeah, I think the broader question here is this a failing of our society, of the systems of education in this country and the story that was fed to us for so long in this country,
mm-hmm.
in through official channels. And then also, like, I mean, we're really now turning to a Broadway musical for historical accuracy? Like, that's...
I would like just a little more historical accuracy.
Fair enough.
We should be able to expect more historical accuracy. And until the Broadway musical of A People's History of the United States happens, and it should. Who's going to work on that?
Why not?
Somebody who is in charge of these things.
Could be the new Cradle Will Rock.
Start doing it. It's a solid grade A Broadway musical.
Yes.
It is
and then you should read more about it.
And then you should read more about it. Because I mean, not to beat a horse here, but like the people who make Broadway musicals want you to leave the show humming a song.
Mm-hmm.
And loving someone in the cast. But
I don't think people leave loving Hamilton.
They don't.
They leave loving the Schuyler sisters.
They leave loving the sisters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, listen, make your own decisions.
It is a brilliant piece of entertainment. I will not vouch for its historical accuracy.
We also watched the documentary John Lewis, Good Trouble,
mm-hmm.
which is now on...
It's iTunes, Amazon.
Oh, okay, so it's a streaming. You have to rent it
on
one of those platforms. Okay. Yeah. A documentary about Congressman John Lewis, who's now 80, 81,
mm-hmm.
That does not flinch from him not always being a good guy.
Well, it does.
Did I say that right? Did I have too many negatives competing with each other?
I'm not entirely sure, but okay. I'll say this. It does.
It does not flinch away from moments when he was not great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that it gives us all of the moments in which he was not great.
It gives us one.
At least gives us one big one. So that, you know, that does keep it from being like a complete, like, hagiography of John Lewis. This is This is produced for CNN Films.
Yeah.
It is one of a series in recent years of documentaries about, you know, important figures who are still alive and who are very much involved in the film.
And who can speak for themselves.
Yes, yes.
Which is nice.
But I think, you know, and I think I just, they are, they're all, it's also, though, they're granting access. And
yes.
You have to sort of go into a movie knowing that that's what you're going to get. Because I think with the exception of something like Wiener, where like everything just sort of exploded around them anyway.
Right.
Usually you walk into those movies and you know you're going to leave feeling good about the person that it's about.
And you have no reason not to feel good about John Lewis.
No, absolutely.
The civil rights pioneer.
Yes.
He, as a very, very young man.
Yes. Involved in the student SNCC, I was sure what it stands for, the Nonviolent Coalition, like, did the lunch counter sit-ins in Nashville, helped organize and participate in the March on Washington, like...
Spoke there.
Yes.
Yeah.
As Hamilton would say, was in the room where it happened.
Yeah, he was in lots of rooms where it happened, and he has never stopped holding his fellow congresspeople's feet to the fire, which... in the current administration has made him lots of enemies.
Yes.
And he, and probably historically in other administrations as well. But like
the title says, he is out to make good trouble.
I knew enough about him to know that I wanted to watch the doc and that I think he's cool.
Yeah.
What I learned about him is that he is constantly willing to go shake it up. He hasn't gotten old and tired.
Oh, no, no, no.
He has gotten old and ready to go march again.
Yeah. The fire is still there.
And so, and getting back to the thing I said about, you know, when they don't flinch from showing you, you know, a less than savory thing that happened with him. He was in a race.
The first time he ran for
congressional race, he was running against
Julian Bond.
Julian Bond, his lifelong friend.
Yeah.
And it occasionally turned into a sort of dirty campaign.
Yeah.
And when it was over, they're both sitting next side by side on a news channel, and the news the reporter asks Julian Bond, "Are you going to be friends with him now?" And Julian Bond said, "In time.
It's going to be different."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was like, oh. You know, I'm not a politician, so I don't know how these things play out. And I know that when people are running races, you know, against people they know, respect, maybe even like, that maybe there's going to be an element of that take place. And you have to own that you did it, and he did.
I mean, both of these guys were like, you know, they'd put in a lot of time in politics.
Yeah.
And so I think for something to be considered as much of a betrayal as this thing is, it's not your run of the mill. Like it had to be the kind of thing even politicians would be like, oh. You're going to do that?
Right. It was strange to watch the documentary address it and uncomfortable to watch, you know, this real-time rift take place between two men who have supported and cared for each other.
Whose families were friends.
Whose families are friends and whose, you know, careers are intertwined and whose lives are intertwined.
Yeah.
But that, I don't want to make more of that than the film does.
That's
the
just
film,
a moment.
The film is largely... a story of all of the accomplishments that he has made. And I'll tell you, one of the most important things about it to me is as a lesson for other people in Congress who could use some reminding that their job is to serve people.
Right.
And not to just maintain power, which is what campaigns now consist of, you know, money pouring in.
I saw the John Stewart movie. I know all about
how was that. How was that?
I know all about the problems.
I saw it too, but I completely erased it from my mind because it was so bad.
would that I could. But no, I will have forgotten about it by Labor Day, I'm sure. No, you're right. And you know, there are...
Say that again. You're right. Yes, Dave White is right.
Dave White is right.
Yes, say that again.
And a lot of people that they talk to in the movie are people who are following in his footsteps of shaking things up. So,
yes.
You know, AOC is interviewed in this mm-hmm. documentary, and Ilhan Omar, and, mm-hmm. you know, Ayanna Pressley.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it really is kind of paying tribute to these people who are willing to enter the halls of power and, like, you know, stomp their feet and get things done.
And it feels good to be able to admire someone in the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just for, you know, I mean, like, just for a moment, yeah. Like, everyone isn't absolutely terrible.
Right.
You know, you can look to some of the folks there and say, you know, you have done good work, and you've continued to do good work, and you care about your constituents, and you care about the country, and you care about what kind of country that we could be.
Because, like, the movie shows, here's a guy who's, like you said, you know, pushing 80 or already turned 80 by the time they're shooting all this in the 2018 midterms, and he is stumping.
Yes.
He is going to Texas to talk about Beto, and he's going to, like, all these different places to campaign because he's, like, this really great speaker and obviously, you know, this hero of the civil rights movement, and he is putting in the time and the effort and the physical effort of going to all these places and doing this stuff. And so, you know, the cynic in me thinks that anybody who's been in Congress that long has done many, many, many terrible things, you know?
Well, for me, I think if the worst you've done is compromise with you know, the opposing side
mm-hmm.
on something you really wanted, something you believed in, and you let people down.
Sure.
If you're going to go into politics, you're going to let someone down.
Of course. Absolutely.
You're going to betray someone in the population.
Yeah.
But if you can say you know, if your balance sheet
exactly
is more on the side of good than bad.
He can point to a ledger that's pretty
impressive. More than we can expect from people like Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and all of those pieces of...
excrement.
Ish.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
I was like you said, I was very happy to see Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the film.
Yeah.
Because they're, I mean, I don't stan a politician.
No, nor should one.
Or a singer or an actor or anything. I don't. I just won't. Because your heroes...
What if Kylie Minogue ran for Congress?
Your heroes are... going to disappoint you.
Mm.
They're going to do something that's disappointing. And you can't just be there all the time saying, yep, good job. You know what? I don't really, you know what? That thing they did that was bad, they didn't really do that thing that was bad. It was some other thing. Let's pretend that it didn't happen.
It had to happen because otherwise it would have been even worse. Like, no.
Just like the characters in Hamilton. And so now you don't turn political figures into your heroes.
Yeah.
They will disappoint you. But I am glad that those three were in the film because I have hope. I have hope because of them. Yeah. I have a little bit of hope Agreed. Because of them.
Formally, do you think there's anything like special about this movie? Or No. Is it that they have such a such a magnetic subject?
They have a magnetic subject and they have lots of great footage from his career because he
oh yeah
and he's always on the camera
and there's a cool thing that the filmmaker does actually where like he watches the footage
yes
like it's this room where like all you see is the giant screen behind him and he's watching footage some of which apparently he's never seen before and is visibly moved by so that's kind of a cool thing
that filmmaker by the way
yes
her name is Dawn Porter
yes
she made Gideon's Army
mm-hmm
What else did she make?
She's got a...
Spies of Mississippi.
Doc background.
Yeah.
Voting Matters. Bobby Kennedy for President. So, you know. So, yeah. She's... It's very...
Trapped, which is about anti-abortion laws.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, you know, go check out her films.
Yeah. It has a polish, I'll say that.
Well, yeah. No, she's good at her job.
No question. So the other Lin-Manuel Miranda movie this week, sort of, the wonderful documentary Mucho Mucho Amor about famed astrologer and psychic Walter Mercado, premieres on Netflix this week.
I first learned who Walter Mercado was, I guess, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I would occasionally see him pop up on TV and think, who is this? Who is this person? And what are the capes? And
who is Liberace Criswell?
Yeah, like, what's going on with this person? I can't stop looking at this person. What's being said? And then, you know, Alonzo, as a Gemini, you know how I feel about astrology.
I think...
And how important it is to my life personally.
I can't remember the...
You know, there's two of me as a Gemini. Yeah,
yes. I can't remember the first time
Actually, that's every single thing I know about what it means to be a Gemini, is that there's supposed to be two of me.
Ah, well, I'm a stubborn Taurus. I don't remember the first time I saw him on TV, but it was probably when I was a kid because, you know, when we got cable when I was in my teens, we didn't have the option of the Spain channel like we get now, the TVE.
Right.
But we got one Mexican channel. Like, it was either Univision or I think it was Galavision, actually. I don't know if that's still around.
Yeah, yeah.
It was whatever the network that showed Sábado Gigante.
Yeah.
And so my parents, if it was just
them... I thought that was Telemundo that showed Sábado Gigante.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I can't. Maybe we had more than one. I don't remember. But I know that Sábado Gigante came on because you see Sábado Gigante and you never forget it.
If I was at home on a Saturday night in the 90s, I was watching Sábado Gigante because even though I didn't understand anything that was being said, what a thrilling show that was.
Oh, it never stops.
Anyway, go on.
Anyway, so I'm sure at some point or other in one of those things, he would have popped up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Walter Mercado is this guy who was, as a child, he was a faith healer. People would go to him for laying on of hands.
Yeah.
And he became an actor and a dancer.
Uh-huh.
And then one time, apparently, he was on TV in Puerto Rico, and they started talking about astrology stuff, and he, like, did the readings for all the signs.
He lit up and went off.
And people were calling the station. It was like, you got to come back tomorrow and give us 15 minutes of Walter Mercado on the stars.
Yep.
And a star was born.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, this movie is this just wonderful look at this extraordinary life. And, you know, somebody who he never came out, but was so obviously a transgressive figure in a macho culture.
Yeah.
This guy who comes out with, you know, grandma hair and resplendent gowns and jewelry. Uh-huh. And, you know, but his whole shtick, though, was whatever the horoscopes were, whatever the predictions were, it was all positive. It was all upbeat.
Yep.
It was all, you need more love in your life. It was all supportive. It was all...
And you will have more love in your life because you're going to make more love in your life happen.
Exactly. You're going to follow your dreams and that's going to bring you love and, you know...
He was seemingly using astrology to simply preach self-love.
To be a motivational speaker, basically. Yeah.
And... Although, when he got involved with, like, the Psychic Friends Network, that was a little sketchy.
And there's inevitably, like, the agent who totally exploits
takes all
him
his money,
to the point that he, like had him sign away his likeness and name and all this stuff.
Just a mess.
It was a six-year court battle to get that resolved. But, yeah, so this is directed by Kareem Tapsch and Christina Constantini. Kareem Tapsch, you may recall, did that movie The Last Resort, about the retirees in Florida.
In Florida, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I think is maybe still on Amazon Prime, I think.
I think it might be, yes.
Okay.
So anyway, so this is just this loving portrait. And
then Lin-Manuel Miranda
shows up. And he is so starstruck meet Walter Mercado.
He's in tears.
Yeah.
He's so excited and so overwhelmed with emotion. And he says, look, I watched you every day with my grandmother.
Yeah.
And you weren't allowed to speak.
When Walter Mercado
was on TV, it was like, shh, 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 shh.
He's
getting to my sign. Yeah. And Walter Mercado is so lovely and graceful with him. And so, like, I admire you and I respect you and I love the work you've done. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is like, I can't breathe. I'm so... freaking out.
It's
that thing where you, and this is, I've never, you know, experienced this in a major way. That thing where someone whose work you love,
and turns out they love,
turns
yours,
out they love what you do too.
Yeah.
And if it's, and if there's a great, you know, fame disparity between you, obviously, then, you know, you as the person who's being praised by the person who by rights shouldn't even know who you are, you know, it's fun to watch Lin-Manuel Miranda receive that from Walter Mercado and to just be, you know, a puddle of giddy excitement.
Yeah.
Yeah. The film concludes with
an exhibition
at a Miami museum about the life and career, and lots of costumes, lots of capes, lots of jewelry.
Yeah, it was like when we went to the Liberace Museum in Vegas.
Yeah, but I think about this guy as Liberace without that like jerk quality that apparently Liberace
possessed. That's the thing,
offstage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I jokingly referred to Walter's sort of longtime, you know, Man Friday as his Scott Thorson, but like obviously Liberace was terrible to Scott Thorson.
Yeah,
and you know, this guy's been with Walter Mercado for decades, so obviously he's being taken care of, and you know, it's a nurturing environment.
In the, on the issue of coming out, when you are a mysterious otherworldly presence, you know, in the culture. I think personally, this is just me, my personal opinion. I think sometimes you go beyond that necessity.
Yeah.
I know there is, for decades now, you know, the mantra among queer people is you must come out, you must say, you must speak.
Right.
But when he's asked about his sexuality, he smiles and he says, I have sex with the ocean. I have sex with the moon and the stars
and the flowers
and the wind and the flowers. And you're like, you know what? I accept that.
I love the young guy.
I fully understand that. And I completely accept it.
I love the young guy who says, if he were to be around now and you basically had somebody who was an androgynous, gender nonconforming, asexual astrologer.
Yeah, non-binary, asexual, and high femme.
Yeah.
And
like that person would be like the toast of Instagram.
Yeah. But he was more than that.
Yeah.
He was this kind of magical being.
Like they described him as like almost being like the Pope, basically,
in
Latin America.
I don't have 1 ounce of interest in astrology.
No, me neither.
But I just think he was so lovely.
And here's the thing, it's about a guy who you could very easily try and make a movie about this guy and make it be like, look at this grift that he pulled off for decades. You know, if you don't believe in this stuff.
Right.
But like, you don't have to believe in this stuff to sort of appreciate how committed he is to just like giving people this message that they needed to hear, that they could do things with their lives. And if they had to do it because they were Sagittariuses, then so be it, you know. Anyway, it's a lovely movie. It's on, it premieres on Netflix on July 8th. I highly recommend it. As much of a like bummer and reminder of the tragedy of the world that we live in that Welcome to Chechnya is, Mucho Mucho Amor will just like uplift you to the stratosphere. But they're both great and they're both worth seeing.
And we have one more.
Mm.
Would you like to know more?
I would.
South Korean film.
Yes.
From a first-time filmmaker, Kim Bora.
Yes. Bora Kim, depending on how you do
depending
the...
on who's doing the talking.
Yes.
I'm thinking that if I'm talking to her, she's going to introduce herself as Kim Bora.
Bora. Yes.
It is called House of Hummingbird. Did I already say that? And it is semi-autobiographical. Story of a 13, 14-year-old girl. Learning about the disappointments in life,
as she
maneuvers into adolescence.
Yeah.
It is a film in which not a lot of incident takes place.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of feeling is packed into its 2-hour, 20-minute running time. A little bit long, but not
appreciably.
Doesn't overstay its welcome.
I was thinking about how so many American movies about like teenagers, especially teen girls coming of age, they are allotted this degree of agency in the world. You know, they go off to work in their job in the mall, or they, you know, they do stuff at school or whatever. And this girl, it just, you constantly sort of feel like how conscribed her choices are by her family situation, her parents, the way her friends treat her, different things like that. And it's heartbreaking, but really beautiful and moving.
Character's name is Yoon-hee, mm-hmm. played by a young actress, Park Ji-hoo.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where she came from, but the camera loves every tentative thing that she's giving.
This is one of those kid performances where you're like, where is this
person? It's really a quiet performance. She doesn't have a lot to say, but she is so expressive.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel her and you root for her every step of the way, whether it's through, you know, her family, which is a mess.
Mm.
Her brother who abuses her. And by abuse, I mean, he just beats on her.
Yeah.
She is lonely, she's quiet, she has a friend at school, but there's a trouble with that. She tries to make a new friend, trouble comes from that.
She has a boyfriend, and she's not reliable.
They try kissing. Mm. You know, she smokes a cigarette, she shoplifts something, she goes to a teen dance club.
Yeah.
She has a bad teacher, who's I don't know if he is a typical teacher of South Korea, or if he's meant to be, you know,
particularly terrible.
Particularly terrible, but he's the kind of teacher who says things like,
he passes out slips of paper and asks them to name the delinquents in their class.
Name the delinquents in their class. And a delinquent in this man's universe is anyone who dates,
mm-hmm.
anyone who sings Smokes. Karaoke. Anyone who does anything except study.
Yeah. Going to karaoke, very bad.
Apparently. It's a very bad thing. And then one day, he's gone, and a new teacher is here.
No, that's...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I just said that completely wrong.
After school, she has
after
to go
school,
to Chinese classes.
She goes to
classes,
Chinese class. Far,
and
sorry.
She has a whatever teacher, and then he's replaced with somebody awesome.
Yes. A new teacher comes in, and she's kind, and she's thoughtful, and she listens, and she cares about Yoon-hee.
Yeah.
And she asks her, what do you like? What do you want to do? What do you want to be? You know, we're going to learn Chinese. We're going to learn, I guess it's a Mandarin class.
Yeah.
But she learns that Yoon-hee wants to draw comics. And so eventually there's a gift of a sketch pad. You know, and that's the kind of teacher that teacher barely has to do anything except listen and take a note every once in a while on what this kid is really about.
Yeah.
And do you know what happens to that teacher? They become beloved. You'd remember that teacher for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And so this is a lovely, thoughtful, generous movie about a girl sorting out the trouble in the world.
Yeah. Go on. Well, no, I was just saying, I remember during the whole discussion about Parasite, there were a lot of critics who were saying there are whole levels of commentary on South Korean society here that Western audiences are completely missing.
Right.
And I'm sure there's probably stuff here that we're not getting. There is, it is set in 1994 for a very specific reason that results, that pops up later in the film about a real life event. So I'm sure, I acknowledge that as a, you know, white North American film critic, that there are no doubt, you know, niceties and subtleties and commentaries about specifically cultural things that I'm probably missing. But even through the eyes that I have to see this film, I found it incredibly moving, and the performances are so great.
It's so good.
Yeah. And so this film is available through Kino Marquee. So if you go to KinoMarquee.com, you can find, movie theaters, film nonprofits, whatever, in your area or near your area that you can rent it and stream it. You should check it out. Also opening this week was Hirokazu Koreeda's The Truth, and we're going to talk about it next time because we're running long.
Got some letters.
We do.
From Ben. Benjamin. Says, Dave's documentary, he's talking about the documentary that we discussed on the last episode called In My Blood It Runs, Australian film about an indigenous kid and his life.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Peter Weir's gorgeous film, Rabbit Proof Fence.
Yes.
Worth watching.
Yes, that was the film whose name I couldn't remember, that's about the horrifying policies that the Australian colonists inflicted upon the Aboriginal population.
Dr. Steve. Hello, Dr. Steve.
Hello, Dr. Steve.
Before I was lucky enough to see Hamilton on stage, I played the cast album on repeat for a month. I am hardly unique in saying that I love it, love it, love it. However, sometimes things we love as nearly perfect invite a particular kind of nitpicking.
Go on.
I once learned from Australians that their derogatory slang for Brits is poofs. With all the connotations therein. Hamilton's King George is definitely a poof, and I sometimes feel guilty for enjoying the character as much as I do. Does the show's characterization of King George raise an eyebrow? Or am I just overthinking openly gay actor Jonathan Groff giving us a little bit of enjoyable camp?
Yeah, I don't look at that performance and think, oh, gay or gay bad. I think, yeah, he is camping it up. It's almost like Panto King George in a way.
It really is.
It is, cartoonishly effete, let's say.
Yeah.
But look, your mileage may vary. I'm not going to say you're overthinking it, but it did not hit me as my homophobia DAR did not go off.
And can we just talk about what a sprayer Jonathan Groff is?
Man.
Boy, those close-ups did him no favors. He was the drool coming off his face.
I mean, it does work for the character.
It does, but I'm like...
it's hard to look at.
Can you not... do you have a handkerchief? Like
sponge? Can someone wipe the king's chin, please?
The spittle was astonishing.
Great performance, though.
That's why you should never sit on the front row.
They spit on you.
Hey, we got a 5-star review, the only kind of review we want.
Hooray!
The only kind of review I accept.
That's right.
The only kind of review I bother even looking at.
It's the only kind we're going to read on the show if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, like this one that we're about to read.
This is from Wally for Arsenal.
Okay.
What team do you think he likes?
Man United.
Great pod. Found through What the Flick. I like the chit chat.
Good thing. You better.
Along with the movies, especially through lockdown. Keep it up. From Ireland.
Ah.
One major quibble I've had is that I loved The Greatest Showman.
You're allowed.
Well, that's not my problem. Wally for Arsenal.
Thank you, Wally. We appreciate it.
He's not done yet.
Oh, sorry.
Also, Paddington 2 for Best Picture forever.
Yes.
Can you say it again just like that?
Yes!
Thanks, King George.
I was going to say, was that too poofy?
Not poofy. It's never poofy enough for me. You know what I like.
Well, now that my beard's gotten so long, you're not going to see the drool on my chin anymore. So.
You don't ever have any drool on your chin.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're not Jonathan Groff.
I am not. Anyway, so awesome. Listen, thanks everybody for listening. Athan. Hey, a couple of podcasts that I'm guesting on this week, so please check them out if you have a moment. Chris Clark at the Suddenly Soundtracks podcast, where they talk about the movie soundtracks in an as much as possible divorced from the context of the film, just as songs, as albums. We talked about the 1776 movie soundtrack.
Did you indeed?
Yeah, so it aired on July 4th. And then also I returned to the Tinseltown podcast to discuss with the mayor of Christmas the music, the Christmas Carol, the musical made for television with Kelsey Grammer, Jane Krakowski, Jesse L. Martin, and Geraldine Chaplin. I am not fond of that one.
I can't wait to hear that talked about for a really long time.
He asked, you know, the first two times they'd been on the show, he sort of said, hey, you want to talk about this? And then this time he's like, do you want to do the randomizer? Which is where, like, you
never
know.
Never do the randomizer.
Yeah, never, boy.
Never
yeah,
I do
said
the
yes
randomizer.
To the randomizer, and this is what I get. Anyway, it was a fun chat. Check that out. Yeah, and if you want more me, I'm also obviously regularly appearing on the podcast Breakfast All Day, Who Shot Ya, and A Film and a Movie. So please check those out as well. Also, go listen to our friends on the internet. Check out what Bibbs and Whitney are cooking up over at the critically acclaimed podcast network. Also, check out The Schmoes Know, Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, and Secretly Timid. Sewers of Paris, yes. You can, again, be like Wally for Arsenal and leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts.
That's the only kind of review you're going to
where leave. That's right, where you can subscribe for free. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Spotify and Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, etc. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Follow him on Twitter at Bluetopia, Bluetopia. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at LinoleumCast, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
That's it? That's all you got?
Well, it's the end of the day. I gotta put the dinner on the stove.
Okay, fine.
Keep you happy and things. Got these sirens outside. I don't know where they're coming or going from.
Whoever knows. All right. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Until then,
goodbye.